Ever think about trees you have known and loved? I only started to recently, when the coolest tree in our yard began to die. That beautiful giant maple had filled the window of my home studio every day of the 26 years we've lived in this house, and I had a surprisingly emotional reluctance to cut it down. I put it off and put it off, went into full denial, really. Couldn't face it. Those twisting, convoluted trunks were interesting even in winter. In summer, that tree provided shade for many, many conversation-filled happy hours with friends. In autumn, the light reflecting from that bright orange and gold canopy would bounce this warm glow through every front window in our house. I tried to convince myself that even a dead tree in that spot would look better than no tree at all. I'm Jeff Hoyt. This is Hoytus Interruptus. In the final episode of last season, and no, I don't expect you to remember that. I haven't touched this podcast in nearly 4 years. I explained how we wound up moving from Seattle to Vashon Island, only to then emulate a local tourist attraction by placing an abandoned bicycle in that big maple in the front yard. To give you a sense of what that tree has come to mean to us, featuring music by my friend Pete Droge, here's how I ended that episode with our arrival on Vashon Island. A few months later, on Valentine's Day, we moved in. Everything will be okay on an island. I keep trouble at bay on an island. I'm just far enough away on an island. It's clear that I'm gonna stay. A few days after we moved in, we learned firsthand about a quaint island tradition known as abandoning stuff on the side of the road to avoid paying a dump fee. Next to our mailbox was a rusted child's bicycle, about the same size as the famous bike in the tree. We just left it there for a couple of weeks, till it was obvious no one was coming back to claim it. Then we found a perfect spot for it in the crook of a big maple at the head of our driveway. That was 22 years ago. The kids have been grown and gone for, 11 years now. But the bike is there for good. The tree trunk has closed around it in three different spots. They're part of each other now. As we came to realize over the years that we had indeed landed in the place where we were meant to live our lives, surrounded by friends who would close ranks around us if we needed them and always have our backs, it's almost as if we have become the bike and the island has become the tree. Aw, that was very poignant, Jeff. Thank you. I made that episode recalling our first days on Vashon just a few years ago. Fast forward to last summer, though, and only one of the 9 trunks in that tree still had green in its branches. Even I could see the handwriting on the wall. Our tree guy, yes, we have a tree guy, everyone in the Pacific Northwest has a tree guy, came over and did the best he could to cut the trunks in a somewhat aesthetic arrangement. So now I look out my window at a tangle of 20-foot trunks. An arborist assured us that the bike had nothing to do with the tree's ill health, so it's still there, completely embedded among those twisting trunks. If we see any signs of life come spring, there might be some hope, but the odds are long, and whatever does come back will probably look like something out of Dr. Seuss for a few years. And I could live with that. But man, Chainsaw Day was a tough one. Never before had losing a limb felt so much like losing a limb. All this tree business got me thinking about how many other trees have provided moments in our lives. And the memories flooded in. When our daughter Natalie was 4, she and Cindy were strolling through a field of dandelion puffballs surrounding a young cedar in the park below our house. They had the idea of festooning this Natalie-sized tree with the puffballs as if they were Christmas ornaments. A Seattle Times newspaper photographer happened to be in the park and asked if he could snap a photo. It wound up on the front page. He won awards with that shot. We still have a blow-up of it on our wall. When we lived in Seattle, we had a twisty, ornamental cherry tree in the front yard. Even when the kids were little, they could scamper through its low, gnarled branches. And every year, when the blossoms began to fall, the kids would stand below while I reached up and shook the branches for a little late April blizzard. In that park just below us, there were lots of woods to run around in. Gotta be careful, though. Trees can trip you up. When I was running through the woods at 14 years old, an exposed root caught the tip of my sneaker and sent me sprawling, diaphragm first, onto another root. And I had the wind knocked out of me for the first time in my life. And I was all alone. It was terrifying. I couldn't breathe. Thought I was going to die. I rolled over on my back, and there I was, under the canopy of this enormous tree. I really think it helped keep me calm. I relaxed. Didn't panic, just went with it. And after a bit, when I got my first tiny sip of air, I realized I'd be okay, and I quietly waited for my breath to return. That experience came in handy 30 years later, when our son Eli was maybe 10 and climbing in that giant maple right here in our front yard. He was, I don't know, maybe 15 feet up when a branch snapped off under his weight, and he fell, also diaphragm first, onto the seat of our bike in the tree, and now it was his turn to have the wind knocked out of him. He wasn't alone, though. I just happened to be in the yard when he fell. By the way, it's amazing how few steps you need to get to your kid when you see him fall out of a tree. Not sure my feet ever hit the ground. Laid Eli down in the grass. His eyes were wild, and he was confused. Why was I so calm when he couldn't draw a breath? I said, "You can't breathe now, but you will. You just had the wind knocked out of you. It's going to take a few seconds, but just stay still. You'll be okay. I promise." And he was. Got him checked out. Nothing broken. All was well. For me, there has always been a tree leaving an impression. At every stop, life has taken me. And I wonder if the same is true for you. I'll bet you have way more stories about trees than you ever realized. You're thinking about one right now. Don't tell me you're not. But to bring this story full circle, I offer the memory of yet another tree from my childhood that was employed for a bit of subterfuge. This goes back to the late 60s, and UFO sightings were on the rise. I'd read up on how many of these sightings were faked and how people could be swayed into believing them. My best friend back in Carmel, Indiana, was Steve Hickson, who lived just up the street. He'd taken a liking to photography at a young age and had a brand new Kodak Brownie camera. He wondered if we could fake our own UFO sighting. In his backyard was a young 15-foot tree that Steve said we could photograph from a low angle. With nothing else in the shot for perspective, it could easily pass for the top of a 200-footer. Then we attached a metal garbage can lid to a fishing pole and dangled it over the tree from a second-floor bedroom window. He took a bunch of shots that all looked like, well, a garbage can lid dangling from a fishing pole. We realized that the only way that the lid might look like a real UFO was if it were spinning so that the handle would blur and become indistinct. So I threw that garbage can lid like a frisbee over the top of the tree over and over, and Steve clicked away. Most of the shots were utter failures, some comically so. But there was one that was perfect. If you didn't know the tree was just 15 feet tall, you could believe that this object was hundreds of feet up in the sky. Even better, I needed an idea for my 7th grade science fair project, so I made an exhibit about UFOs and how so many of the sightings have been proven to be fakes. On the day of the fair, though, I made the claim that during my research into fake UFO sightings, I actually saw a real one with my own two eyes, and it turned me into a believer. And I didn't know how to reconcile that with my science fair project, which was already in progress. I told passersby at the fair that my premise had been shaken because of my own experience of seeing an actual unidentified flying object. Then I pulled out a small, slightly bent photo of the top of a very tall tree, and poised above it, hundreds of feet in the air, was a disc-shaped object silhouetted against the sky. I made up a compelling story of how I happened upon it, and all I wanted was to get one person to believe me. Hardly any did, But a few seemed to fall for it, which was the whole point. Then I confessed to my trickery at the end of the fair, thinking I'd proven my premise by convincing at least a few people that I really had seen a UFO. In the end, my project was dismissed as not an actual science fair project, and I came home with nary a ribbon. So, how, you might ask, does this story bring us full circle in our exploration of trees I have known and loved? Well, Steve never lost his affection for photography. Today, he shoots photos all over the world, publishes calendars, sells art prints of his work, and recently, he traveled to Portland, Oregon, to photograph the famous lace-leaf maple in the Japanese garden, right at the peak of its full fall foliage. It's a stunning image, and it landed in my inbox just days after we took a chainsaw to our favorite maple in the front yard. Cindy and I decided we needed Steve's maple to hang over our living room couch. If we can't sit in the shade of our favorite tree anymore, at least we can sit under a two-dimensional version that came along just when we needed it. We still hold out hope that our bike tree will show crazy new growth this spring and convince us not to give up on it. And if it doesn't work out, well, at least the tree is short enough now for staging a fake UFO sighting. From an island in the upper left-hand corner of the lower 48, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.